Hello, Legion of Audience. This is James, and before we get started today, I wanted to take a second and let you all know about the brand new Who Would Win Patreon. If you'd like to support the show and get behind-the-scenes access like you've never seen before, go to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow right now. Who Would Win patrons will have access to outtake videos, early info on battles, and even get a vote on characters that we'll use in upcoming episodes. So if you'd like to support me and the show, head to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow, and for as little as $5 a month, you can define yourself as more than just a fan. You'll be an official member of the Legion. Hope to see you there.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Far away from any battlefields more commonly known, Jon Snow has made his way to an island far away from Westeros. It is here that he seeks dark magic to gain the upper hand against the White Walkers and all others he must defeat when he returns home. Entering the hut of an alchemist, he discovers that only one powerful artifact remains, but it is for sale. It is then that Inigo Montoya bursts into the hut with a mostly dead man draped over his shoulder. He needs that artifact to bring his friend back to life so that he may continue his quest for revenge. Jon Snow calls out that he was there first. This is horribly unfair. Well, the artifact means everything to both men, and a duel must be had to determine who gets it. It's swordsman versus swordsman. It's bastard versus Spaniard. It's Jon Snow versus Inigo Montoya. Today on Who Would Win?
And welcome to another episode of Who Would Win, a show that completely ignores anything important happening in the world and instead focuses on a fictional battle between two characters from the worlds of comics, sci-fi, and fantasy. I'm your host, James Gavsey, and as always, I'm joined by the one and only Ray Stikanis. Today's matchup is an epic sword and sorcery fantasy battle that pits two great classic warriors against each other. In one corner, you have Jon Snow, the bastard son of Ned Stark, who let nothing stand in his way and heroically rose to prominence in Game of Thrones. And in the other corner, you have Inigo Montoya, the master swordsman from Spain, who was on a mission to avenge his father. As usual, I did the patented Who Would Win Google test just to see how many times this matchup has been discussed. And I only found one, and I mean only one instance of this matchup being discussed online. But as usual, it just never came to a clear conclusion. But that's going to happen today, all thanks to what we're about to do. Ray, what are your thoughts on today's matchup?
I'm hyped for any battle that brings us down closer to human level. Jon Snow, great swordsman. Inigo Montoya, maybe the best swordsman from his world. All of that said, we've been dealing with a lot of very super-powered characters, a lot of over-the-top kind of combat. It is going to be fun to get down into the trenches and do some real argument about fighting today.
You know, I got to tell the Legion of Audience, I wasn't crazy about today's matchup. Of course, Jon Snow's awesome. I knew who Inigo Montoya was, but I had never actually seen The Princess Bride until the production team said, hey, this is the character. I'm like, well, I better get acquainted with them. And oh my gosh, how could I have not seen this movie? This is an amazing character. I'm really looking forward to this battle. And, you know, today's battle is going to be tough. These two characters, as many similarities as there are, these two combatants have just as many differences. For this kind of battle, you need that rare combination of logic, deep understanding of geek and, you know, past and contemporary culture, and an ability to stay within the lines of what both Ray and I present during this Titanic debate. But yet again, we went in the complete opposite direction for some reason, making another appearance on the Who Would Win Show. It's fan favorite judge and podcaster extraordinaire. It's the only adult in the room, we think. It's Robert Clark Chan. Robert, welcome back to Who Would Win.
I'll have you know that introduction did not endear you to me at all.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I mean, truth hurts. But again, the sting of the Care Bears versus Deathstroke battle that ended in a tea party where Deathstroke walked away, literally removing himself from the field of battle, yet somehow getting the... I don't know what's happening with what you're saying.
If you keep going the way you're going, Robert Clark Chan is going to remove himself from this episode. So please, stop insulting our judge. And this is me saying that about Robert Clark Chan.
It's pretty wild. Even more wild, I am the last person to ever have xenophobic thoughts or to, you know, curse the foreigners and what have you. But my God, not having seen The Princess Bride, I feel compelled. It's welling up in my throat. I need to say, go back where you came from.
Wow.
Go home. Wow. Go back to Canada where they have like third run American products. Princess Bride is a national, it is an international treasure, but like any good American should have that under their belt, for goodness sakes.
Listen, okay, pulling back
I'm
the
surprised
curtain a
little bit. It wasn't on the citizenship test, to be it quite honest with you.
We don't need all 50 states. Look, 30 states and Princess Bride. That's
Thank
what
you.
The citizenship test
I did have to list every episode of the A-Team and what the A-Team did and how many times they got shot. By the way, it's zero. And to the listeners out there, Legion of Audience, just remember, in Canada, especially back in the 80s, we didn't always get movies that were in the United States coming to Canada. RoboCop never came to my city. I didn't know that was a thing until I moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and saw him in WCW when he almost tag teamed with Sting. Anyway, with all that being said, Robert Clark Chan, tell the Legion of Audience, our fan base, what you've been up to.
I've been, you know, doing the thing, doing some fun podcasts over there. We've been doing a lot of like HR Puffin stuff kind of stuff on Annoying Us Half the Podcast. If you those crazy mascot children's shows from the 60s and 70s that now traditionally you only watch when you're in college doing the things that college kids do, watching children's television shows, watching it stone cold sober, that is three times the trip, I will tell you.
I mean, you are, you've done many, many dangerous and, you know, crazy things in your life. This may be the most dangerous of all. Robert Clark Chan, listen, I'm going to just jump out on a limb here and kind of assume that you are very familiar with everything and all things related to The Princess Bride and Game of Thrones, but that you will actually make a clear-cut, logical decision that has nothing to do with tea parties and people kind of, you know, leaving. I'm saying that with this battle, someone's dying. Would that be a correct assumption?
Look, you don't know this, but Princess Bride, absolutely someone could die at a tea party. So I'm not taking tea parties off the table.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Okay, that's fair. All right, listen, we've got a great battle. We've got an insanely great judge who makes equally insane decisions. Who knows what's going to happen on the Who Would Win show today? With all that being said, Ray, please do us the honors and announce today's matchup.
Representing Game of Thrones, the hero who surely must know something. I mean, come on now. Jon Snow. And representing the Princess Bride, the swordsman who isn't known for being cerebral, but he's always Potinkin, Inigo Montoya.
That was clever. Oof. See, that was some good writing right there.
Look, if Chan doesn't like my puns, that means I nailed it.
Correct.
It means he's jealous.
It's a good watermark. Yeah.
It's a good watermark. All right, now, well done, Ray, and I'm using all of those words in air quotes. Before we go any further, let's go over the basics of a Who Would Win match. Now, each debater will make 3 points. Keep in mind that the Who Would Win match is a random encounter in a neutral location with no prior knowledge or prep time allowed, and the debater has to stay within the confines of the character. And when it comes to determining the winner, it's the judge who has the final say and will determine which character lost based on death, incapacitation, or battlefield removal with no outside interference being allowed. Remember, you can always check out all the rules on our website at www.whowouldwinshow.com. TV. And before we get started, don't forget to visit the official Who Would Win store. Visit www.whowouldwinstore.com to get your hands on some great Who Would Win shirts and merch. And now, let's get to the tail of the tape for both of our combatants. Ray, please give us the details for Inigo Montoya.
Inigo Montoya is a master swordsman of Spanish descent. He was created by William Goldman for the 1973 novel The Princess Bride, but he was later played by Mandy Patinkin in the 1987 classic movie of the same name. On a full-out revenge quest to kill the man who killed his father, Inigo Montoya traveled the land looking to end Count Rugen, a six-fingered nobleman who committed that murder. This brings Inigo in contact with all the characters in The Princess Bride, and while he does lose his fight to main character Wesley, he does eventually get his redemption by finding and killing the man who killed his father, Christopher Guest, star of Waiting for Guffman. Spoiler alert. Fun fact, this very famous sword fighting scene from The Princess Bride was painstakingly choreographed and rehearsed, and it shows. Both Mandy Patinkin and Cary Elwes studied sword fighting, both right-handed and left-handed, for months leading up to the filming. Not only that, but they saved the scene for near the end of production to give the two of them even more time to get it down. But also, they had sword fighters on set to pull the actors for extra training on the spot in between takes regardless. Now, they really, really, really wanted to get this scene right, and I'd say they pulled it off. Film history buffs will tell you the same. That is Inigo Montoya.
Very cool. Now, here are the details for Jon Snow. Jon Snow is a key character from A Song of Ice and Fire, a fantasy series by George R.R. Martin. He first shows up in A Game of Thrones, the first book that came out back in 1996. However, for this debate, I'll be using the television series version of Jon Snow. Now, Jon's known as the illegitimate son of Lord Eddard Stark of Winterfell and grows up with his noble half-siblings. He's a guy with a strong moral compass and a deep sense of justice, always grappling with his status as an outsider because, you know, he's a bastard. Throughout the series, Jon's journey touches on big themes like identity and belonging as he tries to find his place in a world full of political chaos and looming supernatural threats. Jon's story really picks up when he joins the Night's Watch, a group dedicated to protecting the realm from the spooky dangers that lurk beyond the wall, a massive barrier of ice in the north. As the series unfolds, Jon grows from a young, unsure guy into a leader who can handle the brutal northern wilderness and the mystical threats of the White Walkers. And here's an interesting fact about Jon Snow. Did you know that Kit Harington, the actor who brought Jon Snow to life, showed up to his audition for the character with a black eye? It's true. The night before his audition for Jon Snow, Harrington was at McDonald's, like all of us do before a big audition, grabbing a bite to eat with a woman he was seeing. Unable to find a free table, they asked to sit at a table occupied by another couple. After sitting, the man they joined began making rude comments to Harrington's date. It was only after Harrington stood to challenge the man that he realized how tall his would-be opponent actually was. Yeah, in quotes, he says, "I got battered," he said in a later interview, but he added, in quotes, "I think that man who punched me in the face may have helped me to get the job. So if you're watching, thank you." And that is Jon Snow. Now you have the facts on both opponents. Robert, do you have any questions before we get started?
No, I'm kind of interested to see because I feel like I know Game of Thrones intimately, the TV version, but it's been so long. There's not actually a lot to Inigo Montoya in the movie, so I imagine they're probably going to be dragging in some book stuff, but like there's a bunch of stuff that I don't know, so yeah, I'm kind of excited.
What's interesting to me about this Inigo Montoya character, and Ray, please tell me if I'm running wrong, is that the book is somehow part of the continuity of the movie, or the movie fits within the continuity of the book.
I see what the two of you are doing here, and you are getting me from both sides for not saying the specific version of the character in my intro like I'm supposed to. I get this show and what you're doing. I am using the movie version with some back history from the book sprinkled in, as it is a pretty faithful adaptation that seems like a fair way to do it.
So you're saying Robert and I are both correct?
I'm saying that I'm correct and you're riding my coattails.
I mean, this is trash.
Hashtag Ray is right.
Here we go. All right, let's get this party started. Ray, hit us with your point number one.
Point number one for Inigo Montoya. We're going to talk about how he is a sword student. This is a guy who made it his life's ambition to get revenge, as his father was killed right in front of him when he was only 11 years old. And he even tried to sword fight Count Rugen right there. So he tried to sword fight him right there and actually held his own for a moment before the Count put him down and let him live and let it happen. That's fine. So for 10 years, Inigo Montoya practiced sword fighting for 14 hours a day for 10 straight years. There is a hatred. There is a revenge plan bursting out of this man's chest, carrying him through an entire part of his life. He has a reputation for being the greatest swordsman in the entire world. Specifically, through his sword training, he learned how to fight both uphill as well as downhill, and that comes into play in his big sword fight there in the movie. In fact, he learned specialized fighting all over the case because he did not know exactly the situation where he might have his chance to get revenge. So to just be safe, he learned how to fight from high ground. He learned how to fight from low ground. He learned how to fight from inside the trees. He learned how to fight standing on ice as well as in the sweltering heat of the desert. He learned all the moves of all the greatest sword fighting masters of all time, and he can even call them out and recognize them based on who created that sword fighting strategy and implemented it, which allowed him to use things such as the Agrippa defense, Capo Ferro, Bonetti defense, as well as La Verdadera Destreza. It's a great name that I can't pronounce, but it's Zorro's sword fighting style. So if Zorro is known as a great master sword fighter of all time, well, Inigo Montoya learned the Zorro fighting style and quite honestly can implement it even better than Zorro. If the two of them were to meet, he would take him down. I know this because Inigo has gone fighting against all of the best local sword fighters in his community. He goes into competitions and he wins all the competitions. There was no other swordsman in all the land up until a certain point. That he cannot be defeated in battle. He is so good at fighting and so impressive that when Wesley, you know, the one, defeats him, the man in black, in Cary Elwes in the movie, right? When he defeats him, he says, please, you know, I would ask you not to kill me. I have not completed my revenge quest. And Wesley is so impressed by his fighting that he says, you are a work of art. You are such a tremendous swordsman. I couldn't dream of killing you. That would be like throwing a rock through a stained glass window. The level of greatness of his sword fighting, his greatness in sword fighting comes from years and years over a decade straight of training, being a great student, and training his body. But we'll get into that more in my point number two. But for starters, that's my point number one.
Okay, listen, I get that the whole message is that Inigo Montoya is this badass swordsman. It's kind of like, you know, Zorro meets, you know, more Zorro with a lot of training for, you know, to get this kind of level. And that's cool. But a couple of things. Number one, if he's only 22 years old, those are some rough, that's some rough mileage on Inigo Montoya. I agree. He's probably put himself through some rough stuff. If that's what a 21-year-old looked like back in the day, that is horrific. But the real thing is if he was that good and spent that much time and was that almost maniacally kind of dedicated to sword fighting for all those years, how come he not only lost the fight with, you know, in his first encounter with Wesley, that's after Wesley climbed something and was super tired too, so he's low on energy, but also got disarmed not once, but twice by someone who clearly didn't have the same time put into training, yet still outperformed him sword fighting wise. So he's, what, a number two sword fighter in the whole world? Anyway, so what I'm just trying to say is, if this person is such a badass sword fighter, how did he get disarmed and beaten within minutes by Wesley in the first encounter after Wesley was tired because he was climbing up that hill? Just something to think about. That's all I'm trying to say. So my point number one, let's talk about the basics of Jon Snow. Now, Jon Snow from Game of Thrones, look, bottom line, he's a force to be reckoned with. He's got this awesome mix of brute strength, mental grit, even a bit of magical, I don't know what, mojo, you want to call it that, especially when it comes to his bond with his dire wolf ghost. I just love this thing. Now, let's dive into what makes Jon such a standout in the series. Let's talk about his physical abilities. He's got crazy endurance and stamina. We've seen this. Think back to the Battle of the Bastards. Jon was kind of like this energizer bunny on the battlefield, and he just kept going. Even when he was nearly crushed by a wave of soldiers, he just had that endurance and stamina and kept going. His combat skills. Look, he's pretty much a sword fighting prodigy. He picked up his skills, when he was super young. He was training under Sir Roderick Castle at Winterfell. And with Longclaw, that's his Valyrian steel sword, I should say. He's not just playing around. Remember, you know, this is someone who took down a whole bunch of White Walkers at, what was it called, Hardhome. This guy is pure epicness when he fights. That's all I'm saying about that. Look, the guy's strong on top of that, like really strong. He once hoisted Alistair Thorne into the air during, you know, kind of a little bit of spat at Castle Black. It was just a total power move. His agility's awesome. He's super quick on his feet. That time at Craster's Keep, his dodging weaving saved him from getting killed by his own men turned traitors. He's also got insane toughness. Let's talk about his mental resilience. You know, Jon's as tough in his mind as he is physically. He's handled some really heavy stuff, like finding out who his real parents were while trying to keep the North together and face off against the Night King. Look, I get it. Inigo Montoya is trying to find the person who killed his dad, and eventually said, that's crazy. Jon still kind of, I don't know, maybe had to deal with more bigger stakes. That's all I'm saying. And he did it. Now, on top of that, he's got this pain tolerance and recovery that's absolutely outstanding. This guy's been through the ringer. He's been stabbed, beaten, even killed. And of course, he came back thanks to Melisandre's magic. You know, if that doesn't scream tough, I don't know what does. But let's talk about that. The supernatural connections. There's that whole resurrection thing. Look, I get it. The comeback, you know, when he came back from the dead, it wasn't under his own power. But the wild plot twist is that it's kind of like a major sign he's tied to some deep mystical forces. I think that all came to play in big time in, you know, season 6. No spoilers here. He's also got what's called warging potential. I hope I'm pronouncing this properly. Wargs are people with the ability to enter the minds of animals and perceive the world through their senses and even control their actions. And the act of doing this is called warging. In the show, it's more of a subtle hint, but there's this connection between Jon and Ghost, his massive dire wolf, and that suggests he might kind of like share a psychic link with it, much like his, you know, brothers and sisters do with their dire wolves. But one thing's for sure, this connection to his dire wolf, it's kind of some weird spiritual bond, because, you know, they're just more than man and like really cool big pet. They're a team, and Ghost has been there to fight off wildlings and stay right by John's side, even when after he was resurrected. The dire ghost for John is kind of like Serpentor with his flying, you know, little thing stand that he has. It's part of the character. Look, if you look up action figures of Jon Snow, I'm sure the dire wolf is right there. You can buy him as a package. That's our rule for the Who Would Win show, to say they're together. Look, John and dire wolf, you know, the ghost was even there when John was resurrected. I'm telling you, this wolf is by his side all the time. Jon Snow blend of fighting abilities, his mental strength, his mystical links. This makes him a dangerous and gable character in not just Game of Thrones, but especially in this battle, because he's ready to take on all sorts of challenges. I haven't even gotten to the good stuff about this character, but that is my point number one.
All right. No, look, I'm a big fan of Jon Snow. I am a big fan of what he brings to the table, but I will argue right now that as far as people that he fights around and with, I'll say Tormund is a better fighter. Tormund is a much bigger hero, and I'm not just saying that because he has a big red poofy beard, but I will argue that that helps him greatly. Also, we're talking about a contrast in styles here, in that Jon Snow, often when he fights, he's fighting against, you know, sort of peasants. He's fighting against the armies of very, very rich people in Westeros, in that, you know, he's very, very impressive when he's fighting against barely trained people who are there against their will. I remember in a fight against the wildlings, I believe at the Wall, where he fought finally a guy who matched his own skill. He was about a foot taller. He had a giant battle axe, and they went back and forth and back and forth. And what happened? Jon Snow got himself, he lost his sword. He got disarmed by a guy with a giant axe. And if it wasn't for the fact that the giant guy overplayed his hand after hitting Jon Snow's face off an anvil and throwing him through a fireplace, dear Lord, Jon Snow was able to kind of hit him by surprise when he continued the fight. He should have just let Jon Snow be at that point, which is great. You brought up the fact that Wesley did, in fact, beat Inigo Montoya in that fight. Listen, being the number two swordsman of that universe, not a bad place to be, but I'll get more into that a little later on.
You know, again, it's like I said, the more I find out about Inigo Montoya, the more I really, really like this character. And at the same time, I still think Jon Snow brings more to the table. But let's see what a judge has to say. Robert Clark Chan, you've heard one point from both Ray and myself. Where's your head at so far with this matchup?
I don't know yet, because I think it's pretty clear that Inigo Montoya is the better fighter, the more skilled swordsman. He's got a lot of, you know, he shows off a lot of acumen there. On the other hand, Jon Snow has a lot more feats. Yeah, he's done a lot more fighting zombies, which I don't think that Inigo Montoya has ever done. The magic, maybe. The question I still have that I'm going to answer, so you can just leave it well enough alone, is are we allowing Ghost? Because honestly, if it were an action figure, I would expect to see Ghost there. And so by the rules of who would win, yes. But also by the rules of who would win, that's kind of not a fair fight to have a giant magical dog with you. So we'll decide if at the end, like, I allow him and then also allow Fezzik to show up. Yeah, we'll see.
I mean, Andre the Giant is like Jell-O. There's always room for more. Except if you're on a plane or
there's literally no room for Andre the Giant in most places.
Correct. But in any cinematic venture, right? Like, I mean, if you want to add $100 million of revenue to your film, both in ticket sales, you know, VOD, whatever, and merchandise, add Andre the Giant to your picture. Would that be a safe assumption?
Well, that's fair. Yeah.
That's fair. All right, good. All right, listen, this battle's heating up. Stay tuned for point number two.
The next chapter in the New York Times best-selling Last Kids on Earth series is here in The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. If you didn't know, The Last Kids on Earth is a graphic novel series from authors Max Brallier and Joshua Pruitt, where 13-year-old Jack Sullivan survives the zombie apocalypse in what's been called The Walking Dead meets The Simpsons. Yeah, you get it. It's bright, it's fun, and it's got an art style all its own. It's crazy. Now, in The Last Comics on Earth, our band of heroes are hard at work creating their own sequel, which of course is going to be bigger and crazier than anything ever seen before. I mean, we got supervillains, we got monsters, heck, we got a kaiju with a car head and hamburger feet who's named Steve. Yeah, this book has it all, and it carries the important Who Would Win Show stamp of approval. So if you'd like to check out this new book that also has a spin-off Netflix series, might I add, then let's make it happen. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com and learn more.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
And we're back. Ray, let's see what you got. Hit us with your point number two.
Point number two for Inigo Montoya. Let's talk about his general swordsmanship. We talked about how he trained and where he came from. Let's talk about his swordsmanship. So first off, he has achieved the rank of wizard. I didn't know that was a rank. Apparently, it's very special for the Princess Bride universe, because if you rank as a wizard in sword fighting, it means that you have achieved a level higher than master. I didn't know there was anywhere to go but up, but down from master, but here we are. He's a wizard. Now, let's never forget, when he fights Wesley, he fights with his left hand first in order to make it a challenge for himself. He really wants to fight Wesley in a fair fight. Now, maybe against a character like Jon Snow, who will fight super, super dirty, that That will work against him, except for the fact that as soon as Jon Snow does one dishonorable thing, Inigo Montoya will eviscerate him. While as Wesley kept everything on the up and up the whole time and fought fairly, won fairly, and Inigo Montoya could accept that result. Now, he does switch from his left hand to his right hand against Wesley in that big fight, because he realizes that while he's getting some success, he's not getting over as easily as he thought he would. He's actually being challenged by the one, if you will. And so he has to fight him more correctly. I think with a character like Jon Snow, I don't think that overconfidence is going to be there. You look at Jon Snow, you're not going to take that guy lightly. He's wearing that, you know, sparrow jacket. He's got that big old sword. They're doing something a little bit different. Now, Inigo Montoya is very, very strong. You know, I don't know about the strength feats of Jon Snow, but I think grabbing that big rope and then pulling up Wesley is absolutely going to be huge. He got that strong because he spent 2 hours a day in training for 10 years squeezing rocks with his hands to increase his hand strength to help him in sword fighting. He's also very, very fast in combat. He took over 2 hours a day training for 10 years his agility. That allows him to do things like flip over a rock when he gets disarmed up in the air and catch his own sword and continue fighting. When Jon Snow got disarmed against the wildlings, that sword was out of the battle entirely. And let's face facts, disarming people is going to be a common strategy with a rapier style of fighting, which is what Inigo Montoya will be doing. He also is very good with endurance, spent 2 hours a day running for 10 years, sprints, just to improve his endurance and allow him to keep fighting for longer periods of time. Not to mention that he flipped off that ledge, which is kind of great too. In the movie, we saw him put down four soldiers at the same time. While we see Jon Snow defeat a lot of soldiers, usually he's going from fight to fight to fight to fight. He isn't necessarily taking on a group of people at the same time. It's a much more chaotic situation in his battles. And that just brings me to the sword itself. Because the sword that Inigo Montoya uses was a specially made rapier from his father. That is a fencing sword. And what actually caused the problem is the sword was so good that his father didn't want to sell it to the Count. He said, "You, while being a great swordsman, will never appreciate how great this sword is. I don't want to sell it to you." And that's when the Count got mad and said, "Give me the sword." He says, "No." And then he kills him and then slashes Inigo, 11-year-old Inigo, on the both cheeks. So he'll remember it. But he does let him keep the sword, which is perfectly balanced, perfectly sharp. It's been said to rival Excalibur in its greatness. So this is a great sword. Whereas Jon Snow, what sword is he using? It's just something he kind of found in the trash, isn't it? It's just something that was given to him by the Night's Watch. I don't remember Jon Snow getting any kind of magical or mystical or powerful sword of any kind. He just sort of uses whatever the heck is nearby. Well, that's not as good. I got the better fighter with the better weapon and, quite honestly, the better reason to fight. That spells victory, and that's my point number two.
All right, look, this is all good stuff about Inigo Montoya, but, you know, here's the thing. He's a wizard in sword fighting, and this is just something that does kind of bother me about the character. When, you know, you look at, like, any type of Jedi or even Sith in the Star Wars universe, I know it's a different universe, once they hit a certain level, what do? They start creating their own styles. They've got their own style of fighting. I know he's got his own, but something they can actually teach and name and pass on. I don't think Inigo has that. Like, as great as he is as a wizard, which is beyond master, there are levels even above that that I just don't think he's gotten. And again, not to sound like a broken record, the fact that he got disarmed twice and underestimated Wesley and felt like he was – there was a little bit of overconfidence. I don't want to say arrogance because he's so noble, but there's some overconfidence that plays into him that he doesn't figure out is an issue until he's well into the fight. And again, with Wesley, and even against the main character he's trying to kill for revenge for his father, that was almost fatal for him. Look, he's been disarmed. I know he's amazing. I know he's tough. I know he's got this physicality to him that's great. I love his agility and how he was doing some Olympic-style flips and what have you. But again, the thing is, his sword, what's more powerful, his sword or his sword play? I think if you gave him almost any decent sword, Inigo Montoya is going to be fantastic. His sword is sharp. It's a craftsman, beautiful thing. But it's not super strong. It's not supernaturally great. It's a great sword, but it's not something that is beyond, that world, so to speak. It's not lost, style of making that sword. So I just don't think that sword's going to hold up, and I'll tell you why. Because in my point number two, let's talk about the weapons of Jon Snow. Now, I'm just going to get into it right away. Let's talk about Jon's sword. It's called Longclaw. Now, this is made of Valyrian steel, which is pretty much the superhero of metals in Game of Thrones world. Valyrian steel is actually legendary for being super strong, incredibly supernaturally sharp, and ultra durable. It was originally made by the Valyrians. Think of them as the ancient high-tech wizards of their time for the Game of Thrones universe. They used some serious magic, even dragon fire, actual dragon fire, in the forging process, which is a big part of why this stuff is so special. Here's the deal with Valyrian steel. It's not just tough. It's sharp enough to cut through other metals like a hot knife through butter, and it stays sharp. Look, Longclaw is absolutely, I'm just going to say it right now, Longclaw is absolutely breaking, as in breaking Inigo Montoya's sword. On top of everything, it doesn't need much upkeep, unlike regular swords that need constant sharpening. Plus, despite being so strong, it's lighter than normal steel, which lets, you know, Jon Snow just move faster and swing it faster more easily during a fight. And it, you know, it doesn't break, doesn't chip. So having a Valyrian steel sword like Longclaw isn't just a status symbol, it's a massive advantage in this battle. Now, on top of that, he also carries a dagger. Ray, you were talking about how Inigo Montoya is great with his left hand. Well, here's the deal. Jon Snow might be great with his right hand, but his left hand is going to be doing something really cool. It's going to be, you know, sneakily grabbing that dagger and using that as well. So he's got almost called what's called an espada y daga, sword and dagger style when he needs it. He's also got this chainmail armor that really protects him. Now, the chainmail is not going to protect him against Valyrian steel. Is it going to protect him against harsh, blows? I'd say to the extremities, yes. I don't think it's going to prevent, something from stabbing right through him, but it's definitely going to hamper it quite a bit. And on top of that chainmail armor, he's also got that thick jacket that he wears, and that also takes a lot of damage really well. He's very, very, very well protected. Now, let's talk about Jon Snow's fighting skills. I already talked about it before. He got into sword fighting pretty young, learned the ropes at Winterfell under Sir Roderick Castle, the master at arms for House Stark. His go-to weapon, of course, is the Longclaw. When it comes to getting scrappy without weapons, however, Jon picked up some essential hand-to-hand combat skills during his time with the Night's Watch. These moves come in handy for those up close and personal fights, or when he's lost his sword and he needs to think fast. I'm not saying he's going to lose his sword, but you know, if Inigo Montoya can lose his sword, I don't know. I want to say it's out of the realm of possibility for Jon Snow. It's just something that's there. In up and close combat without any weapons, I think Jon Snow definitely has the edge, especially because he keeps his dagger hidden behind him within his chainmail. So Inigo Montoya doesn't know that dagger is there. Look, he's also decent with a bow and arrow. That's not going to come into play in this. He's not walking around with a bow and arrow, nor is someone handing it to him. But he does have this great knack for tactics and strategy that really grew when he joined the Night's Watch, of course, where he shot up the ranks to become Lord Commander. And this is where he had to plan not just for fights and overall defense, but really figure out what he had to do on the fly, which served him well against the Wildlings, against the White Walkers, and then, you know, with fighting side by side with Daenerys and everyone else. This is someone who can fight, come up with a plan, change on the fly, and deal with anything that's unexpected, because that's what, I don't know, that was like his average day. Look, he learned all this from the best. He took away a lot of lessons in combat from Jor Mormont, Stannis Baratheon. And, you know, this is just someone who understands the nuance of fight. Not just sword fighting, not just revenge, but how to fight and how to get the win. He's grittier. He knows how to survive a fight. He knows how to lure someone in. And he knows how to surprise someone really, really well. Those are things Inigo Montoya doesn't have because he's got this honor base. And this is going to surprise him, give him the edge for Jon Snow. That's my point number two.
All right. Yeah, look, I think Jon Snow, like, I love the character. I'm a big fan of his fight scenes, and he does a great job. But let's talk about a few specific things here. First off, Chan, you brought up the action figure argument, and I have looked on Amazon.com. There are multiple Jon Snow action figures that do not come with the wolf. It is just Jon Snow. But if you look for, I believe, Diamond Gallery's PVC statuette, there is one of him and the wolf. If it was the statuette argument, I'd say let the wolf in, but it is the action figure argument. Also outside interference. I would love to bring Andre the Giant into this battle, but I don't think that's fair because he would defeat every single other person in this battle by himself. And he's not even supposed to be in the fight. So I will just say that. Now you talked about the different fencing styles and whatnot, and you compared it to Star Wars. That's interesting because I actually wrote down here how like the great Jedi Masters learned like, what is it, 8, 9 different lightsaber fighting styles and could switch in between them, and they usually learn like one or two of them. much in that way, he's learned every single fencing style. So much like a lightsaber person would, Inigo Montoya has done that, but with his chosen weapon. And a big sword versus fencing sword. Well, Inigo Montoya is a better duelist. Again, Jon Snow can hack and slash his way through a bunch of untrained soldiers, but when it comes time for him to fight somebody who actually knows what they're doing, he does tend to struggle, especially against somebody who's ready to stab him.
I love where this battle is going. Okay, look, we are at the turning point. Robert, you've had a moment to ponder 2 points from both Ray and myself. Who do you think is ahead, and what does the other side have to do to pull out the victory?
Look, Ray, I told you that I would be the one deciding whether or not Ghost shows up in this fight. You telling me that I haven't gone on to Amazon to see if the wolf comes with the action figures? I have, thank you very much. And the average seems to be about 1 in 5 figures have it. It's kind of on the fence because a dire wolf's a pretty big object, and, you know, production costs being what they are. It's still in the air. Leave it to me. I'll handle this. Second off, Ray, what's the name of Inigo's sword again, the kind of sword he uses?
It's a rapier.
Well, I'm Inigo Montoya, and I'm here to say I love sword fighting in a major way. It's called a rapier, not a rapier, and I'm gonna make fun of you just like I would if James did it.
It's it depends what country you're from.
It does not. It does not.
Gentleman's language
anywhere. Go back to Canada, Ray.
It's actually pronounced rapier because it's French.
In
thank you.
General,
James got my back against this judge. What's happening in this battle?
I don't know where we're going right now.
I feel like Jon Snow is pulling ahead, or at least even this time around, because he does appear to have a lot more of the kit. Excuse the pun, but like he's the swords, he's got armor and whatnot like that. But I mean, there was a point made a little while back about Jon Snow's mental toughness, and I still haven't really figured out what he's fighting for here, because Inigo is always fighting to find his father's murderer, kill him, etc., etc. He's got a goal. 98% of Game of Thrones is Jon Snow wandering around going, what am I doing? What am I doing? He may be mentally tough, but like he doesn't really have much of a reason to fight if his, I guess, immediate family isn't there and being tormented by snakes or what have you. So I don't know. I kind of need to see a reason for Jon Snow to be in this fight. Otherwise, he's getting taken out pretty quick by that rapier. Is a rapier like more rappy than say like where is he on the M&M scale? Is he rappier? Mm. Is he less rappy?
Mm.
If you could just tell me that, that's what I need to hear from you, Ray. Just tell me who wins.
He uses the real slim saber.
It's passable. Passable.
I mean, I'm not sure where this battle is going, but it's going in a great direction. Stay tuned, because we're about to get hit with point number 3.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back. Ray, look, it's now or never. It's do or die. Go ahead. Hit us with your point number three.
Point number three. Let's talk about some of the special feats and talk about some of the victories of Inigo Montoya. Because, Chan, you just mentioned it. I have it right here. Inigo Montoya is fighting for revenge with the ultimate amount of willpower. He has been practicing his line, "My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die." He has been practicing that line for well over a decade, and he is not going to fall before he has a chance to look at his father's killer dead in the eyes and say that to him before bringing him down. And that's going to allow him to fight a little bit harder than Jon Snow, who, again, what is Jon Snow even fighting for? I mean, he makes so many weird choices over the course of Game of Thrones. He goes to the Wall. He decides he wants to be with Daenerys. All kinds of just strange things happen. He goes on weird quests, is what I'm saying. North of the Wall, what's even happening? And Inigo Montoya will not stop till he gets to kill the Count. That's just true. But a little bit of toughness here, too. Because let's not forget, in the final fight scene, to prove this willpower, the Count actually got over on him a little bit. He was chasing after the Count after he said, "I'm going to come get you." And he chases after him. The Count turns around and throws a dagger right into the middle of his chest. That would bring down many people. He just pulls it out, which you're not supposed to do. I've seen Black Panther, but he pulls it out and he decides to keep on fighting. At that point, he is stabbed multiple times in the left arm and shoulder. And despite all of this, he's able to automatically parry every single shot from this master swordsman, the Count. And just by reaction, just by sheer force of will, he cannot lose. And he's knocking aside shots at the absolute last second possible, despite extreme blood loss, despite the fact that he should not be able to fight anymore, and is still able to cut his face twice and then stab him through before telling his Count that he wishes he could have his father back. A very powerful moment. A very powerful moment for us all, quite honestly. And the armor that they're wearing. I mean, look, Inigo Montoya is not as well armored as Jon Snow, I'll say it, but that allows him to be more nimble. That allows him to move better, that allows him to get in the shots he needs to win the fight in his way. The armor that Jon Snow has is very, very good for opposing hacking and slashing and the type of, again, untrained combat that he is used to, and the big swords and sort of glancing blows. What that armor will not protect him from is being run through and stabbed through, because the Count was wearing not so dissimilar types of garb when he was run through by Inigo Montoya, especially since we consider Jon Snow was wearing that armor when he got stabbed with little tiny daggers all over the place by his own Night's Watch. And what had happened from that? Did he get up and give a speech? Did he get up and keep fighting? No, the guy died. The guy died right there after being stabbed by a whole bunch of little cuts. And what's going to hit him in this battle than a whole bunch of little stabs that stick certain organs and bring him down? Heck, Jon Snow lost to his wildling wife, Ygritte, in battle. He can't even defeat his own wife in battle. What are we even talking about? And at the end of the day, Inigo Montoya has one of the best lines in movie history, and Jon Snow has one of the most bizarre endings in movie history. Which one of these has stood the test of time? I don't know, but I guarantee 40 more years from now, we're still going to see Inigo Montoya t-shirts. I don't know that we're going to have Jon Snow saying his very famous line, "Ah!" as he dies from stab wounds. And that's my point number three.
All right, so, you know, here's the deal. I wonder if Inigo Montoya, if he was placed into the Game of Thrones world, how quickly he would die. I hope he wouldn't. And if he did die, would someone want to bring him back? Hopefully. I don't know. I do know that Jon Snow lives in a much more dangerous and threatening world/universe that Inigo Montoya lives in. Not that it's perfectly safe in this world either. Okay, look, in terms of answering Robert Clark Chan's question, what is Jon Snow fighting for? He's fighting for himself. Look, this is someone who needs to validate himself. He was the bastard. He was Ned Stark's bastard son. He had to go to the Night Watch because, you know, that was the only place he could get respect and kind of any validation. And that's what he fights for, is validation, respect, and to keep on going and to pick up causes along the way, like Daenerys' cause and what have you. In this fight, what he's going to see is Inigo Montoya coming after him full blast and a perfect opportunity to validate himself against an opponent for some reason who's attacking him, but who's also honorable and what have you. Great opportunity for Jon Snow to be like, okay, if I win this, I am worth something. I'm worthwhile, you know, if I beat this opponent. On top of that, Inigo Montoya, Ray, you were talking about how he got stabbed in the chest. He did not. He got stabbed in the lower right abdomen. It's not the chest. It's not the heart. Still hurts a whole lot, by the way, and you bleed out slow. Don't ask me how I know. I'm just saying that it wasn't as bad as a shot to the chest where he pulled it out of his chest cavity, you know, that went through his heart and everything. That's it. Oh, by the way, he's still durable, and that was pretty cool that he did all that kind of stuff. Now, Ray, you also said that Inigo Montoya, you know, he won't lose. He can't lose, and yet he did. And when he lost to Wesley, you know, here's the deal. I remember he was on his knees and he said, Wesley, do what you do. Just make it quick. You know, he was accepting his fate. He wasn't like pulling out a dagger from behind him and kind of like living for another second to try to get a chance in, pulling some type of some maneuver to kind of get back. And no. He accepted his fate, just dropped to his knees and like, please make it quick. Cause you know, that's an honorable thing to do. You know, not someone who's like fighting for every essence. If it's just a brawl where he's not fighting for revenge for his father. Look, all I'm going to say is that Wesley, the opponent who was fighting Inigo, had kindness and said, hey, you can use me, I can help you, let's work together. That's not the situation here. Jon Snow's not that kind as much as he is a nice person. Now, let me get to my point number three. Let's talk about Jon Snow's wins, his experience, Inigo Montoya's weaknesses, and how this fight's going to go down. See, you got to talk about the weapons and gear. I've already mentioned this for Jon Snow. He's got Longclaw. He's got, you know, the heavy-duty armor that can take a serious beating. This is someone who fights in harsh conditions and keep going. Inigo, on the other hand, he's got that standard rapier. He dresses way lighter and very cool, by the way. In a straight-up sword fight, Jon's got the better hardware for both offense and defense. That's a fact. Now, there's also a lot of variety and combat experience that Jon Snow has. He's been through a lot. He's battled wildlings, his own brothers from the Night's Watch, creepy undead, you know, the White Walkers, and even the mythical, you know, other stuff, you know, giants and what have you. And each of these fights tested him different ways, pushed him to adapt and learn on the fly. This kind of cool, like varied experience gives him a real tactical edge because he's used to thinking quickly and changing up his strategy. Inigo is definitely a master of the sword, no question there, and his moves are top notch, but his experience leans heavily on traditional dueling, on one-on-one dueling. Jon's been in messier, more unpredictable battles, which could really help him outmaneuver Inigo in a fight. Now, as great of a fighter as Inigo Montoya is, he's got some weaknesses. The first one, he's emotionally impulsive. He's famously driven by that deep personal vendetta, you know, avenging his father's murder. And this is an intense focus he's got that sometimes makes him emotionally charged, which will cloud his judgment, just like he did when he was fighting against Wesley for the first time. He was completely convinced that Wesley was about to die, and he was sad because Wesley's a cool guy. Why should I kill this cool guy? Well, I have to because that's a thing. He didn't have to, by the way. He could have just said, hey, you go your way, I'll go mine. I got to focus on killing my dad. But he's like, no, I think I'll take a time out and just kind of try to kill you instead. Because, you know, that's a thing. Not a good thing. Not really great focus. And he takes risks that he really shouldn't do. That's just something that Jon Snow can capitalize on. He's got this emotional tempo where he knows how to kind of bring out the whatever he needs to in his opponents. And he's done that masterfully. Now, on top of that, I've said this too. Inigo Montoya's got an over-reliance on fencing technique. And again, you know, his style is elegant. It's precise. It's incredibly effective in a traditional duel. And it's a specialization. But that might be his blind spot because Jon, having fought in various types of, I don't know, brawls, large-scale battles, individual duels, encounters with supernatural foes, this is unpredictable fighting that Jon is great at. This is the Who Would Win show. This is based on being in an unpredictable situation, random encounter, no previous knowledge, no time to prepare. This is what Jon Snow does all the time in his battles, what he faces. Look, in terms of adaptability and, you know, environments, you know, his most iconic moments battled, you know, whatever. He was all these environments were controlled. One was a cliff top or whatever, but nothing really changed. There was no outside interference, you know, fighting off against that person who killed his dad. Lovely fight, by the way. But no outside interference from there. They were all very static. That's not what John does. He knows how to make things really crazy and unpredictable. But the big weakness is that Inigo Montoya likes to play with his opponent and has a set of rules. Look, I'll take it back to when he was fighting against, you know, fighting against that person who killed his dad. He's avenging, you know, his dad with this thing. What did he do? He was talking to him. First, he slices him across the face and either cheek, just like he had done to Inigo Montoya when he was 11. And then he stabs him in different spots before running the rapier right through his gut and killing him. But he was playing. He was talking. On top of that, in his fight with Wesley, there were rules. He was sticking with rules. He was switching hands. He was like saying, hey, let me help you up, what have you. He's a very honor-bound type of fighter, which is a problem because the moment you go outside the honor-bound stuff or try to play with Jon Snow, he'll use that to his advantage. You think he got it, you know, you're on top of him with the sword. Jon's like, okay, you got me. Dagger comes out, hits you in the gut and takes you out. Shank, shank, that's the thing. There's just too many ways that Jon Snow will play outside of the rules. And the big thing, the big way I can tell you that is because in the last episode of Game of Thrones, look, I know a lot of people didn't like how it ended. I wasn't crazy about it either. But one thing that really stood out was how Jon Snow took out Daenerys. And how did he do it? Well, Daenerys had the ultimate victory. They're in the Iron Throne room. And, you know, Jon's like, right, comes up to Daenerys and he's like, is this something you're going to keep on doing? And Daenerys is like, yeah, I got to keep doing what I'm doing. Jon sees that, uh-oh, she's getting really mad. So instead of taking out a sword and trying to cut her from afar, he sneaks his way in, gains her confidence, gives her a big embrace and a hug, and stabs her right then and there in this cold-blooded, horrific move that sent emotional shockwaves through everyone watching it, and especially through him. But he had to do it. He hated himself for doing it, but it's something he had to do. Playing dirty against someone that you love, that's horrific. Playing dirty against someone you just met because you got to fight to validate yourself, yeah, that's called every Tuesday for Jon Snow. Put all of that together, and that's why Jon Snow wins this battle, which should be fun to watch, against a very game Inigo Montoya.
No, and that's absolutely my point number three. Not. You're going to talk about Inigo Montoya being emotionally impulsive. Jon Snow is the guy who charged by himself an army of cavalry. And then that famous shot, it's a great moment from the show, don't get me wrong, but what a dumb thing for a guy to do. He charges with his sword out and goes up by himself against an army of horseback fighters. Incredibly stupid. Should not have survived that. But also playing dirty. Jon Snow, as you've said before, is going to fight dirty. Inigo Montoya is going to fight clean up until the point where he sees Jon Snow fighting dirty, which he will try to do. He'll try to use deception. He'll try to use something, a foul move, extra weapons, deceit, all of that. Absolutely, I think he'll do that. And Inigo Montoya will get surprised by it exactly once. And it'll happen during the initial stages of the fight itself. There's not going to be any kind of a, oh, come here, let's hug this out, and then Jon Snow stabs him in the back. By the time that would even possibly happen, Inigo Montoya already is smart enough to know, I cannot trust this man. I am not going to give him the benefit of the doubt at any point going forward. And the final thing to mention is his battle with Wesley, Inigo Montoya's. Yes, he did lose that fight, but it could be argued that Wesley was simply the one. They talk about this in The Princess Bride. No matter how good you are, you'll always be defeated by the one. You'll notice Wesley has a hard time against basically everybody else fight-wise at certain points during the movie, but that's the one for Inigo Montoya. And since the one is Wesley, the man in black, it can't be Jon Snow. Inigo Montoya stabs him repeatedly and wins this fight.
I just got to add something. I love the fact that Wesley is the one and kind of has an answer for everything. Is kind of like this enhanced Batman for, you know, the Princess Bride, and not only survives but thrives through all of this. It reminds me of someone from another fantasy series. I don't know. It's kind of like Game of Thrones. Oh, that's right. He reminds me of Jon Snow. Somehow, Jon Snow is paralleled with Wesley in a lot of different ways, but that's all neither here nor there. Let's get to our judge. Robert Clark Chan, you've heard 3 points from both Ray and myself. It's time for you to make a decision, but before we get to what the judge has to say, let's celebrate the Who Would Win Patron of the Week. Every week, we choose one of our amazing members from the Who Would Win Show's Patreon community and put them in a battle. Ray, which patron do we have today?
Today, we have another longtime patron who's getting another run on the show. Let's hear it for Nathan Fair.
Woo, Nathan Fair. Okay. Nathan Fair, I got a special opponent for you. In honor of the Princess Bride, let's have Nathan Fair go up against Physique, a.k.a. Andre the Giant.
Wow. Okay. Well, Nathan Fair against Andre the Giant. Now, as we all know, Andre the Giant's very big. The man can drink and eat a whole heck of a lot. When faced off against Andre the Giant, who knows he could beat basically anybody in a fight one-on-one, Andre the Giant only loses if he allows it to happen. Except for the fact that Nathan Fair, as we all know, does not play fair. He will use deceit, much like Jon Snow. He will use his cunning, much like Inigo Montoya. And he will find a way to spin around. And during the fight against Andre the Giant, he's going to keep his distance. He's going to let Andre tire himself out a little bit. And then, right when Andre gets a little bit tired, all of a sudden, Nathan Fair is going to reach towards his chest and rip open his shirt to reveal that he is wearing a WrestleMania 3 Hulkamania red and yellow t-shirt. He is going to pick up Andre the Giant above his head and body slam him down, dropping him for the 1-2-3. Nathan Fair didn't see it coming. Well, Andre didn't see it coming. And Nathan Fair wins this day.
All done in 1987 in the Pontiac Silverdome. So you involved time travel into this epic battle, Nathan Fair. That is incredible. Congratulations. Remember, you too can become a celebrated patron of the week. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow and sign up. And you may be featured in an upcoming episode of Who Would Win. Robert Clark Chan, it's time for your decision. Take us through your process. Tell us a story, if you will. And reveal who you think wins this battle between Inigo Montoya and Jon Snow.
First off, Ray, how dare you say that Jon Snow can't beat his wife in a fight? You yourself cannot beat your wife in a fight. I could not beat your wife in a fight. James
definitely
could not beat your wife in a fight. So let's not drag the spouses into this, if we could, please. It's kind of interesting, James, that you bring up Inigo Montoya in the Game of Thrones world. I think there is a very clear parallel to Inigo, and that is Cyril Farrell, who is the swords master to Arya. And honestly, I think he does pretty well. In fact, we never actually see him die. He holds off a whole mess of guards while Arya gets away. In my mind, he's actually the face dancer, face change. No, face dancer's Dune. I apologize. He's Jack and Hagar from later on in the series. That's just a little headcanon for myself. I did the math, and it turns out that 10 years for 14 hours a day, assuming work days, you know, not just like 7 days a week for crying out loud, that comes out to about 35,000 hours of training for Inigo Montoya. And as you only need 10,000 to become a master of your craft, he's 3.5 times a master, which I guess equals a wizard, which is what I demand you all call me now. He only did about 5,000 hours of agility training, though, apparently, 2 hours a day. So that's he's not an agility master. He's pretty darn good, though, I imagine. James, how dare you try and parallel Jon Snow with Wesley? You know not of what you speak, much like your combatant here. I'll say this. Both these guys have dead dads, got huge daddy issues, and that honestly just kind of is a wash. They're both in the same place. Similarly, validation is a terrible, terrible motivation. But honestly, so is revenge. I mean, it's a very romantic story, but it's kind of terrible when you think about living your life. Kids, don't go on a vengeance spree. It won't work out like it does in the movies. It will work out like it does in plays like Hamlet. In terms of equipment, I think Jon Snow's sword, Longclaw, is leaps and bounds better than Inigo's. I mean, Inigo's got a great sword, and I mean, it sounds, you know, kind of like a work of a great master and a wonderful weapon. But yeah, Valyrian steel is close to magic. Not quite magic, but enough that, you know, I call it a plus one sword in D&D terms. And so, like, I do think that he's got the superior weaponry. The strategy, though, definitely has to go to Inigo. The learning all of the different styles and being able to deploy them at will feels very much like a chess master. So he's, you know, in terms of emotion, he's the one keeping his emotions in check during this fight because he fights like a chess player, not like a wildling, you know. That being said, I do think, well, the warg potential was way overblown, and we are not including Ghost in this. I do think Jon Snow has a fair amount of intuition, maybe bordering on magical. It certainly runs in his blood. So I think, you know, like maybe he would not quite get a spidey sense, but just like a mild doggy sense. Let's call it a doggy sense.
Like a rash or something.
Plot armor. Jon Snow's got it for days. I'm sorry. Training, Inigo Montoya, like we said, 35,000 hours versus Jon Snow, who basically trained with some security guards in Alaska for several months. So he's not winning any fans over there. As you say, they both have some emotional flaws. Jon will charge an army, which is dumb. But Inigo plays with his foes, like you say. Like he gets a little too full of himself, and I don't know. It feels kind of like the end of the Rob Roy movie. It's Liam Neeson and I've already forgotten his name, Mr. Orange.
Steve Buscemi.
It's not Steve Buscemi. That's Mr. Pink. Tim Roth. How dare you, Tim Roth? Thank you. Both wonderful actors and a really great fight. And Rob Roy's got this huge claymore or something like that. And Tim Roth has a rapier. And he is
Michael Rapaport.
Thank you. He is cutting Rob to pieces. He is poking, which is what a rapier does. And that is exactly what Inigo Montoya does. And like that chainmail is not going to be worth a good gosh darn against Inigo's vastly superior skill. I'm sorry. I do think that Jon Snow would fight with honor. He believes that he is a man of honor. And anytime he does something dumb, it's always because he thinks he has to be good and true. And so when this fella comes up who absolutely radiates purity of heart, he's not going to go around backstabbing. He's going to try his level best to kill this man. And he's not going to be able to do it because Inigo is just way, way too good. Inigo is going to beat him down. He's going to do the whoosh, whoosh, and give him a couple scars. He's going to poke him, and he's just going to be lying on the ground, completely defenseless. He's been Longclaw is a great weapon, but he's long since disarmed him. And he's going to put his knife to his throat, and he's got him dead to rights. And that's when we get the magnificent Batman versus Superman scene where Jon Snow says, "My dad died. I'm going to die just like him." And Inigo says, "What? Your dad's dead too? What? But we're like blood buddies, brother." Blood buddies? Yeah, okay, I said it. Blood buddies. He picks him up and says, "I'm sorry, I didn't know. You and me are going to be best of friends." And Jon Snow's like, "Thank you. We'll be great friends." And Danigo says, "You can help me track down my father's killers." He says, "Yes." And then, Jon Snow has stabbed Inigo in the stomach because he thinks that he is honorable and he is not. Jon Snow is just the worst. The lesson that we learn after 8 seasons of getting to know this guy and feeling sympathy for him is at the end of the day, he's just another backstabbing, front stabbing Westerosi jerk. Jon Snow wins. Inigo Montoya never gets to find the man who killed his father. He's ruined Princess Bride for everyone.
Jon Snow gets the win over a very well represented Inigo Montoya, someone who I'm now a fan of. Race to Cadence, you may have come up short, but yet again, you did a great job in repping this character. Tell the Legion of Audience, our fan base, how you feel.
I am disturbed by that because it sure as heck sounds like Inigo Montoya won the fight. It sure as heck sounds like Jon Snow walked away in defeat. I don't know how Jon Snow sneaks up on Inigo Montoya for the stab. I dispute this decision completely. I know that the awkward allies and Rainiacs out there agree with me. Once again, I cannot comprehend what just happened.
Robert Clark Chan, yet again, you brought your je ne sais quoi, that means French for I don't know what, to the Who Would Win show and gave us an epic storytelling expose lesson. I don't know what it was, but it was absolutely fantastic. And you gave a win in your own special way to Jon Snow. I'm excited. I thought I was getting the loss, and yet here I am three in a row with momentum over Rey Sicanus. Please come back to the Who Would Win show. In the meantime, tell Legion of Audience, our fan base, where they can find you online.
Go check out our podcast, Knowing is Half the Podcast, available wherever finer podcasts are sold or listened to or caught in your catchers. AE Double Back is a fun pull-up podcast they do where we talk about AEW Dynamite. And, yeah, do those things.
I love it. I love one of the three people on that show, most of all, whose name rhymes with Robert Clark Chan. I'm talking about Knowing is Half the Podcast. It's actually great. All three are fantastic on it. Ray, again, great job today. Please tell our listeners where they can find you.
Of course, James, you can find me on Threads at AlmightyRay316. And you're going to want to tell me what just happened. I don't know.
And you can find me on X, a.k.a. Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook by typing in at James Gavs. You remember to join the official Who Would Win Facebook group to make a suggestion for a matchup for the show and to be part of our growing community. You can also find us on Instagram and TikTok at Who Would Win Show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you go for your podcasts. On behalf of myself, Ray Sicanus, and the rest of the amazing Who Would Win production team, thank you once again for checking out another episode of Who Would Win. We'll see you next time.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast recs and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Hey gang, I hope you enjoyed this episode and love listening to the show as much as we enjoyed making it. Quick reminder that you can support us by going to patreon.com/whowouldwinshow right now. Okay, gotta prepare for next week's episode. Hope the rest of your day is full of wins.